Scientists and doctors have known for some time that one good way to reduce your risk of dementia is to maintain good cardiovascular health. But a new study based on a cohort of 8,000 people has offered the clearest picture yet of this relationship between brain and heart health and how it plays out as we grow older. The paper was published yesterday in the British Medical Journal, and the ABC science editor Jonathan Webb has been looking into the story. Good morning, Jonathan.
Good morning, Geraldine.
Who were these 8,000 participants? What did the researchers find, Jonathan?
Well, these participants, Geraldine, are part of a significant cohort study in the UK, which is known as Whitehall 2, and the clue's in the name. They're actually 8,000 civil servants who were recruited in Whitehall in London back in the 1980s, actually. And the useful thing here is that that's some time ago.
Well, this is the Michael Marmot study too, is it?
I'm not sure if it's exactly the same one. There's been two separate cohorts of this Whitehall longitudinal study. But this particular study looked at the measurements that were done back in the 80s and in subsequent years as the cohort was followed up. In particular, it looked at their cardiovascular health as about 8,000 of these participants all approached and reached the age of 50. There's various ways that we can measure people's kind of heart health at about that age. There were seven different factors involved. And then they followed up by looking at health records, taking people's IDs from the National Health Service and various other registers, and looking at whether or not they developed dementia. And sure enough, there was a fairly strong association, and this kind of matches what we would have expected. But it's interesting to have this really direct measure between people's heart health, people's cardiovascular health, specifically at the age of 50, so at middle age, and then subsequent development of dementia. There's a fairly strong association there. And previously, we've known that link is there, but it's been easier to draw specifically in, say, older people as dementia progresses. It's not often we have a study like this that looks right across the decades and shows a strong correlation.
So does that mean that, in effect, we need to get ahead of this, that being physically fit and healthy while we're young or, say, middle-aged, that it will be good news when we're older?
It does point in that direction, yeah, and in particular in middle age, so around the age of 50. But of course, you know, our cardiovascular health at that age has various determinants, which include, you know, how we behave and act and what our socioeconomic status and things is when we're younger as well. So it's really part of quite a big continuum. But the authors do suggest that we could target health messaging at middle-aged people to suggest that, you know, if they're not smoking and if they're eating well and are physically active, that will help them in later life. And interestingly, even among people who don't have cardiovascular disease. So among healthy people, if the more healthy they were, the lower their risk of dementia was. So it's not just that stroke and other things are playing into this. It does seem to be some kind of fundamental link between circulation and a healthy circulatory system and cognitive function. But the details there still really need to be kind of teased out. The other thing that's important to mention is all you're doing is lowering your risk. There are plenty of perfectly physically healthy and active people who have a wonderfully healthy heart who do then go on to develop dementia. Mm. We're just kind of playing a numbers game here. We're trying to lower our risk.
And there are other things, other risk factors, aren't there, that contribute to dementia. Does this new study mean, in your judgment, that cardiovascular health goes to the top of the list?
It's certainly very firmly on the list, and the researchers are looking at trying to wrap it into some kind of predictive tool, which we do have for cardiovascular disease already. There are ways to combine the various risk factors and make a prediction about people's risk. Dementia's a lot more complicated. There's about 50 different factors on that list, but it firms up cardiovascular health as one of them, that's for sure. I'm not sure whether it's at the top of the list. There are things like, you know, mental health, depression, there's social contact and socioeconomic status. All of these things are on the list. But the interesting thing about cardiovascular health is that to some extent it's within our control. So it might be one of those things that we can get on top of as a risk factor in our earlier life.
Now, from hearts and brains to skin, and in fact the skin of two very special species of shark, scientists say they've uncovered the secret of how some sharks generate generate fluorescent patterns on their skin. I mean, glow-in-the-dark sharks, Jonathan, do I take this seriously?
You certainly do, yeah. This is the swell shark and the chain cat shark, two species that we've known about for a while, and in fact, their biofluorescence was first characterised a few years ago. But what scientists have done in this paper, which is out in the journal iScience this morning, is find out exactly how it happens. So these species of shark have patterns on their skin which even we would be able to see. They have light areas and dark areas. In the swell shark, it's kind of spotty, and in the cat shark, it's a pattern that looks a bit like what you might see on the skin of a cat. It's kind of a blotchy repeating pattern. They've looked at the different areas that fluoresce differently. So the darker areas of the skin don't fluoresce and the lighter ones do. Basically, they take in the blue light that is prevalent when you're deep in the ocean, and they reflect a green light, which seems to only really be visible to other sharks. And what they found in the areas that fluoresced and not in the areas that don't fluoresce was tiny molecules, very small molecules, kind of metabolites, which seem to be responsible for this fluorescence, which is quite different. There's quite a lot of this fluorescence out there in the animal kingdom, and often what we found previously is it's a protein, a fluorescent protein that's responsible. So this is a kind of a new class of fluorescent molecules, which is present at least in these two species of sharks.
And what are they showing off to find a mate, or signalling to each other, or what?
It's a bit of a mystery as to exactly what this is useful for sharks. So, as I mentioned, it's certainly visible, we think, to other sharks based on the characteristics of their eye. So it might be about making themselves more visible to each other, especially as they get lower, where there is only kind of blue light available, as they get deeper in the ocean. It might also be just a side effect of the way that these molecules behave in their skin. They seem to also have antibacterial properties. So that suggests maybe the more brightly fluorescent sharks are healthier, and that might be a useful signal, as you say, to other mates that I'm a healthy, brightly glowing shark. Or it might just be a side effect. We don't actually know how important it is for these sharks, but the scientists are just starting to unpick how the fluorescence is even created.
And finally, Jonathan, National Science Week is upon us, kicking off tomorrow with events right around the country. And the ABC is involved, of course. What are some of the highlights?
Well, there's all sorts of things happening around the country, Geraldine, and there's a sort of National Science Week website where people can find out all about them. Actually underway already, there's an Indigenous hackathon happening in Redfern in Sydney. This Indigi Hack is aiming to present the challenge of preserving Indigenous language to young Indigenous people and empowering them and helping them to kind of come up with an app or some kind of computer-coded solution. Or a potential way of tackling that, which is an interesting project. There are visitors from overseas. We've got the well-known and wonderful marine biologist and explorer Sylvia Earle. Our own Eddie Wu is part of events in Sydney. Paul Davies is involved. Andrea Boyd, who's actually from South Australia and works at the European Space Agency as a flight controller, she's part of events. So right around the place, there's all sorts of things. And our own ABC people are involved as well. Robin Williams and Natasha Mitchell are part of events in Sydney. In Hobart.
And 3,000 people enrolled for breakfast brain teasers too, which has only just started and going open throughout August. Very, very quickly, Jonathan.
That's right. The AHA Challenge, which is our ABC citizen science project. Okay. I've done it. There are some really tough brain teasers in there. It's worth getting involved. It's all on our own website, abc.net.au/scienceweek.
Okay. Thank you very much indeed, Jonathan.
Pleasure.
Jonathan Webb, our science editor, and go to the science section on the ABC News website for more.